Hello, everybody, and welcome to our next installment of our podcast. And today it's all about digital accessibility. The world has gone digital, and that's great. Processes are quicker and easier than ever before. Information is transmitted seamlessly across the globe, and new opportunities have been unlocked far and wide. But what about those who can't experience these numerous benefits? People from any background and age group can be excluded from using devices and the internet, meaning that everyday tasks such as accessing information, staying in touch with friends and families, and being able to work are threatened. It's a hidden problem that can combine with other difficulties in the person's life to create a catch-22 situation, and it's very difficult to recover from it. The problem is widespread. 1 in 7 people are deprived across 2 or more dimensions of digital, and that's according to the Digital Poverty Alliance most recent report. So in a digital age, all organizations and indeed all individuals play a role in creating an inclusive online environment. So what is the role of charities and how can they get started? And to answer all of these very interesting questions, I'm joined by a great bunch of people today. I'm joined by Isabel Thomas, Head of Community Engagement and Experience at the Good Things Foundation, Sarah Parks, Digital Program Manager at Age UK, Ryan Kennedy, Adjustment and Accessibility Lead at Scope, and Heather Reeve, who is Digital Accessibility Specialist for Web Accessibility at Scope as well. Hello, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
And welcome. We are really looking forward to this discussion. And without further ado, let's dive straight in. How is your charity working on digital inclusion? I'll start with people from Scope and Ryan, perhaps.
Yeah, so thanks for the introduction. At Scope, we have a very good, strong organizational focus on accessibility, both digital and content, to ensure that all of our services and platforms can be accessible to anyone, but also to then ensure that the information that we are then sharing is also equally accessible. So everything is created in a way that, regardless of the barrier, you are still able to obtain the information that you need from that. And that's supported both by our internal accessibility training and how we create content, but also how we then work externally to influence other organizations to be more inclusive in the way that they work, and to ensure that inclusion's at the heart to support the 16 million disabled people in the UK today. And then additionally to that, we also provide training on disability inclusion, workplace inclusion, social model of disability, and also delivering digital accessibility audits on a consultancy basis to other organizations.
That's great. Thank you very much, Ryan. How about perhaps Age UK? Sarah, how are you implementing this?
Yeah, thanks, Lisa. So at Age UK, we work locally and nationally to support older people to gain and extend their digital skills. And the way in which we tackle digital exclusion kind of falls into two main categories. The first is service provision. So we have a network of around 130 local Age UKs, and these are local charities who provide the vital support to older people in their communities. And we support these local Age UKs to deliver programs of support that aim to increase older people's digital skills and their confidence, as well as their access to technology, and ultimately help make older people make the most of the digital world. We provide local Age UKs with funding to support this delivery, the training and the tools and the resources that they need to skill up their staff and volunteers, as well as the helpful guidance that they need to deliver quality support services for older people in their communities. So through our Digital Champion Programme, which is our tried and tested model, we recruit and train volunteer digital champions to provide support to older people. And these digital champions come from a real range of different backgrounds. They have varying levels of digital skills themselves. And most importantly, they just want to share their enthusiasm with others. We deliver digital awareness sessions, and these help to spread the word about the benefits of digital and to inspire and motivate older people to get involved. And we also deliver digital skill sessions. So these are sessions that actually support people to develop their skills and confidence to get online safely. Really importantly, these sessions are learner-led, and this means that they're delivered in a way that works for the individual. So that might be remote or face-to-face. It might be delivered in a community centre or in someone's home. And it also might be one-to-one or in a group. And then finally, we provide accessible technology and connectivity to older people who don't otherwise have access. And this is either through loan or a donation. We loan technology to allow older people to give it a go, to see if it's right for them. And then we donate technology for older people who will never be in a financial position to purchase it themselves. And then having all of those activities under one single service provision makes the Digital Champion Programme a kind of one-stop shop for everything that older people need to tackle the barriers that they face to get online. And then secondly, we have the research, influencing and campaigning element of the work that we do. So alongside this, whilst we believe that older people should be supported and encouraged to get online, we also believe that for those who can't or don't want to, that they can access the services and the support that they need in a way that actually suits them. So we do some great work to understand more about digital exclusion and older people, the barriers they face, to really help amplify the views of older people and use our research to influence policy. So just really quickly, for an example of the work that we've done in that area, we've looked at the difficulties that those who don't use the internet have in accessing particular services. So for example, local authority services. We found that the pandemic in itself didn't actually result in a significant change in the proportion of older people who use the internet. We've looked at the impact of the pandemic on everyday life, people who aren't online. And we've also explored the reasons why some older people stop using the internet. We're currently running a campaign called Offline and Overlooked, where we're campaigning to make sure that everyone can access the services that they need and that being offline doesn't mean being overlooked.
Thank you very much, Sarah. That's really interesting. And we're familiar with a few Age UK branches. So it's really good to hear everything that you're doing. And how about you, Isabel? Obviously, you manage more of a network of other charities. So it'd be good to know how your charity is working on digital inclusion.
Yeah, so Good Things Foundation is the UK's leading national digital inclusion charity. And I think you mentioned the scale of the problem in your introduction, and I think it's really important to really centre that here. And so a couple more statistics that really bring it home. There are 10 million adults in the UK who lack the most basic digital skills. And in addition, there are 1 in 14 households have no internet access at home. So it's massive. You know, life is online these days. The 21st century requires us to be interacting, using products and services online. And yet there are so many people who either can't afford to do so or don't have the skills and confidence to use technology safely and confidently. And that's why Good Things Foundation exists. We are on a mission to fix the digital divide for good. And the way that we do this is through offering services that support people to overcome that affordability issue and also the skills and confidence barriers to being online and using the internet. We do this through offering free services. So we have the National Data Bank, which offers free SIMs and data vouchers to people who can't afford to pay for connectivity. And that that data is donated by our national mobile partners. We also have the National Device Bank, which offers free refurbished devices to people who can't afford them. And these are devices that are donated by our public and private sector partners, and they are securely wiped, refurbished if they need to be, and then distributed to people in communities who really need them. And then we also have a beginner's digital skills learning platform called Learn My Way, and that's got hundreds of bite-sized learning topics on it to support people, right from things like, you know, how do I switch on a device? How do I use a mouse? Through to things like online banking and using online health services. So that's a kind of summary of our products and services. But the really, really crucial thing is that, as you mentioned, we have a network of thousands of community organisations all across the UK who can use these services in their communities to provide support to local people. So, you know, we have quite a few local HUKs who are members of our network too, who can use the services that we offer. It's also really important to say that we advocate for change with many other partners as well, but we advocate for change in this space because we believe it's just simply not good enough that so many people are digitally excluded. And we also carry out research. One of the research projects that we're involved in at the moment with the University of Liverpool, for example, is something called the Minimum Digital Living Standard, which is setting out to define what are the basic baskets of goods and services and skills that people need to be able to equitably get online and use the internet, you know, do the things and have the access that most of us take for granted.
Yeah, absolutely. That is very, yeah, thank you very much for that, Isabel. That's really, really thorough. And you highlighted with a few, you know, a few stats and quite frightening stats, to be fair, that millions of people in the UK are still digitally excluded or don't have the right skills or technology to just simply access, you know, access their basic rights, you know, obviously work or engage with families and friends. So that's why it's so important. And obviously it actually leads me to my second question, because, you know, about exploring the practical ways that digital inclusion fits into, you know, the existing work of all kinds of charities. So why was it important for charities to take action? And I can start perhaps with Heather at Scope. So what was it important for your charity to take action on digital inclusion?
So for us, digital inclusion is obviously incredibly important because we're a disability charity. A lot of disabled people don't have access to the internet, and we need to ensure that our services kind of cover both in person and on the phone. We are continuing to ensure that the voices of disabled people in the UK are heard so we create an equal future. We want to influence other organisations as well to be accessible so that everyone can access things. It's great if people have got technology, assistive tech, but if things aren't fundamentally accessible, people are going to struggle to access it. We're encouraging people, and we want to bring others along our journey to being a society with no digital barriers and with accessible websites and technologies.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Heather. I don't know if Ryan, you wanted to add anything from a Scope perspective, or
I think following on from Heather, I think our main purpose is to be able to create that equal future and to be able to make change, but also influence others to become not partners, but to be able to come on that journey to create a fully inclusive society as a whole. And I think as part of that, our big focus is ensuring that we lead by example and that we also help others to push the creative boundaries. Often, ensuring that something is inclusive and accessible can often mean that it has to be boring and plain, but that's not true. It's just that initial fear of we need to comply with this part, therefore this makes it plain. So it's trying to change that shift and the view that we can make things very creative, we can push the boundaries in all areas, but what we have to be very careful of and ensure that organisations are aware of is that, yes, we can do that and we want to achieve that goal, but we also have to make sure that by doing that, we're not creating more additional barriers for another side. And I think fundamentally with accessibility, it's often that making one change may also then disadvantage another
group.
Group, and it's ensuring that disability and inclusion is at the centre so that we can gather all of them thoughts and views to ensure that we come to one single point of access that means everyone can access it in a way that they wish and not a way that we force them to have to follow. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Ryan. And going to you, actually, Sarah, there was something that you mentioned earlier, something that was that I found quite interesting. It was, I think it was your sessions that were kind of user-led. So they were sort of guided by the beneficiaries. And this is how I think it was maybe one strand of how you were making it even more inclusive. So you were making the beneficiaries really part of the whole journey. So from an AGK perspective, why was it important for your organization to take action?
Yeah. So I'm sure that everyone can agree. We've for a really long time now, we've seen technology playing an increasing role in our lives across so many aspects of it. So the way we socialize, the way we manage our money or access services or get entertainment. And in recent years, this pace is just increasing. So really, it left us with no choice but to consider those people who aren't online and the impact that this fast-paced change is having on their lives. So we know that not everyone is online, and we've already had a number of kind of stats thrown out there today. But the likelihood of being digitally excluded increases with age, so as we get older. And at the moment in the UK, there's a total of 2.7 million people aged 65 and over who don't use the internet. And that's the equivalent of one in five of this age group, which is really big. And for those older people who are online, many of those, as Isabel has already alluded to, have limited digital skills.
Yeah.
Even if they do use the internet, they might not be able to complete those really fundamental tasks that require them to use the internet successfully and safely. Our vision at Age UK is a world where everyone can love later life. And we know that being digitally included can support people to maintain or improve their well-being, maintain independence, and also to access those essential services and information that they need. This also crosses over with so many other wider societal challenges we're seeing in the UK at the moment. So most notably, the cost of living crisis that we're living through is making the affordability of technology and also the ongoing costs of connectivity much more difficult.
Yep.
And the benefits of saving money online much more beneficial. And we're seeing these changes in services. We're seeing changes in services that are putting digital inclusion really at the forefront of people's minds. So, for example, changes in the way we provide healthcare, the closure of local high street banks, or simply the way that we're paying for our parking. And these challenges can have a knock-on effect to other challenges that people might be facing. So if you're digitally excluded, can you still access the medication and find the health information that you need? Can you still keep track of your money and access the benefits that you need? Can you still independently travel around your community? And these are all of those day-to-day challenges that people are experiencing that are all exacerbated by digital exclusion. So the provision of those services I've spoken about before and then being learner-led and really tailored to the individual. Yeah, yeah, we don't have a choice but to deliver
yeah,
them.
Exactly.
So.
No, absolutely. Yeah, yes, that's still a very, very important point, Sarah. And Isabel, from obviously the foundation perspective, you've been set up to tackle digital exclusion. So how have you maybe seen the evolution over the past few years on that? And obviously, why is it important for any charities to really tackle that?
Yeah, so I think that evolution point is really, really important. Since the pandemic, lots of organisations have become more aware of digital exclusion, but there's still a huge amount of work to do. However, I think whilst we maybe traditionally focused on skills and confidence, and you would see strategies and interventions around skills and confidence, certainly since the pandemic, and this is also, as Sarah mentioned, really exacerbated by our current cost of living crisis, we really need to focus on the accessibility, you know, and affordability of technology. And that's definitely a change from Good Things Foundation's perspective in the way that we now work as a result of what we saw during the pandemic. And, you know, face-to-face just disappeared, and lots of services and ways we were interacting and how we work moved online. And yet so many people couldn't afford the technology to move with the rest of society to doing that. And so that's certainly been an evolution, both for us as a charity, but I think for other organisations too. I think, you know, we've talked about what being offline actually means. You know, you can't apply for a job. Most jobs now you have to apply for online. It's really hard to get a doctor's appointment. You know, we need to be online to do the most basic things in our lives. And charities are supporting people who will be experiencing other forms of disadvantage or exclusion. And digital exclusion intersects with those things. So it's really important that other charities are able to understand that. And I think there's also, you know, the direction of travel for charities, but also other organisations, is digital transformation of their own organisations. And it's really, really crucial as a charity is going through that digital transformation journey that they are not losing the people they support in that journey, yeah, and that we are considering the impact of these changes on the people we exist to support. And, you know, at Good Things Foundation, we are really clear that it shouldn't be digital by default. There should be still alternative channels for people to use to be able to engage with any kind of service. Mm. However, we really want to be able to help people to make that leap, to cross the digital divide. But we need to recognise that not everybody necessarily wants to do that, and there need to be alternatives open to people.
Absolutely. Yes, yes. And there's also, like you alluded to, the bigger issue of connectivity as a whole. There's still some areas in the UK which don't have connectivity issues with, you know, receiving 4 and 5G. So even if people wanted perhaps to be more, you know, connected, that there are some more bigger infrastructure challenges that the society as a whole need to be aware of. And I think, Ryan, you wanted to add more to Isabel's point.
Yeah, it was following on from Isabel and Sarah about the equal access to whether it's the job market, medical access, utilities, insurance. And part of Scope's research that we've reran shows that we have all these barriers still in society, and digital exclusion is within that. And that shows that disabled people have an additional cost of £975 per month for being disabled, and due to having all of these multiple barriers that are in their way. So I think it's the key thing for all charities is ultimately to be able to raise vital funds to be able to deliver their services and meet their charitable goals. And for Scope, that's for an equal future. And I think that it's trying to shift that mindset of we cannot achieve those charitable goals if digital exclusions still exist, mm-hmm. Because the biggest means of gathering them funds are usually through digital means, other than your door-to-door fundraisers. And I also think that charities exist with a team of employees and volunteers with the shared purpose of reaching that goal. But that then also means that digital inclusion needs to be there. And that's going to then affect your recruitment, your onboarding, your development and progression of colleagues, and building and enhancing everyone's skills. So I think it doesn't only affect those that are digitally excluded from an external perspective from a charity organisation. It also lies at the heart of the organisation as well, is that you can't practically run an organisation if you have that within your organization. So I think it's trying to ensure that other organizations and charities and businesses also keep the focus internally. Mm-hmm. It's very often that we're good at talking as organizations externally to others to influence them, but actually we need to also ensure that we are leading by example and doing it ourselves internally. It's very quick and easy to do it out, but then you forget and leave those behind that are internally. So I just wanted to add that extra little bit of information around the cost and everything that it all contributes to.
Yeah, absolutely, Ryan. That's a very good point. And actually, that leads me nicely to my next question, which is, you know, the practical. So how can any type of charity start to take action on digital inclusion or exclusion? Because as you've highlighted, it also somehow starts from within, and you need to have that strategy, you know, internally on how can we make everybody, whether that's staff, volunteers, everybody align on what digital inclusion means to them. And you know, if there's several, you know, there's disparities in level of skills or even in level of tech, you know, if thinking about charities which have a lot of staff and volunteers traveling on the road or delivering services themselves, how can we make sure that all of these people are, you know, equipped, you know, with the right tech and the right skills in order to deliver the mission. So it'd be great to hear from you and probably start with Heather on what you think, you know, charities can do to start take action on digital exclusion or inclusion.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you. So yeah, I think one of this is upskilling. So we need to upskilling your staff to understand things like the social model of disability. So when you're going out to people, you're not inherently creating barriers for them. You understand how to talk about disability and not creating divide or division. I think as well, kind of internally having adjustments processes to make it easier for people when they're coming in, focusing on like equality, diversity and inclusion, when you're creating new projects and stuff, using co-production and lived experience to kind of build things out rather than kind of just assuming that whatever you make will be fine. And I think as well, kind of internal training on accessibility. So things like content, making sure that all the information can be accessed, that you're using plain English, that you're not using jargon, that you've got other formats available for digital and print, that you're not using abbreviations, and that you've got a decent layout on your website and good colour contrast, all these kind of little things that just make it so much easier for people to get to your content and access it. But that's both externally and internally, because quite often a lot of internal documents, Green. Like policies yep. and stuff, are really complicated. They don't necessarily need to be. You can simplify stuff to make sure that it's quick and easy, and even experts prefer plain English. It's a lot easier. Also kind of upskilling your digital teams to understand accessibility, but also how to implement accessibility. It's great having audits done. We do audits externally, but quite often we also recommend that people do user testing, because your users are the ones that understand it. It's not, we can do it from our perspective and through the guidelines, but it's your users that are the ones that are there. And I think finally, policy, that ensuring digital inclusion is embedded within your strategy and your ways of working and your values, so that it's something that's constantly kind of in people's minds when they're creating projects and stuff. But yeah.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Heather. And those are very, very interesting. Yeah. And very important, I think, especially around the policy, because it's all well and good. But when you are growing and when you are having more volunteers, more staff, it's very important to stick to that strategy, to have somewhere on paper that reminds you why you are doing what you are doing in terms of digital inclusion, because it's embedded in a strategy, it's embedded in almost, you know, part of your mission. And from your point, Isabel, is there, you know, anything you want to add in terms of first steps?
Yeah, I mean, I think that point about making digital inclusion a strategic priority is crucial. And looking at how digital inclusion can be embedded within what you already do. So I think, you know, our advice is go with the grain of your work, rather than feeling like you need to do this as an extra bolt on. actually think of it as being part of everything that you do and making sure that digital inclusion is woven in. And so it's really about thinking about what success looks like for the people that you exist to support as well, because it will look slightly different for different groups of people. And it's really thinking about, therefore, what does this mean for us? What does this mean for the people we exist to support? I think this idea of embedding digital inclusion into your support also works quite well, especially when we're talking about people who have low digital skills, because people will often feel intimidated by the idea of digital and technology and kind of go, it's not for me. And then it's very hard to work with that. So we talk about, and many of the organisations in the National Digital Inclusion Network talk about doing digital by stealth and providing the support almost by stealth. So can you weave it into activities in a creative way where maybe you're introducing tablets into social activities and people are having fun, because that's a way that you can pick up skills without actually being in a formal digital skills session. So it's really thinking about, you know, how can we do this in a way that is going to really work with for the people that we support. I think another thing is to remember that you don't have to do this by yourself, and that working with others in partnership is really important, particularly if you're a local charity and you're getting started with digital inclusion. You know, look for others in your area who are also working in this space or who may be able to support you with it. That's another thing that we would highly recommend.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, it's always good to hear from peers, from other charities that have been there, smaller charities, which sometimes are able to deliver great impact as well. And talking, you know, thinking about Age UK and sometimes smaller branches, what do you think, Sarah, would be the key, you know, key actions that charities can take?
Yeah, so, I mean, first of all, I absolutely agree with the inclusion of digital inclusion within the organisational strategy, to make sure that there's it's acknowledged and valued across the entire organisation. And as well as the organisational strategy, it can also be helpful to develop a digital inclusion service strategy in itself, which specifically outlines the organisational goals, the objectives for the provision of that service and the actions that need to be taken. So taking it that kind of one step further. And also, as Isabel said about the benefits of partnerships. At Age UK, we've seen so much value in community partnerships, both locally and nationally. And they really help to ensure that beneficial collaboration whilst also reducing the risk of duplication and competition. So we found partnerships helpful to recruit volunteers who are the kind of the core to the delivery of our service. But more importantly, we find that establishing those strong links with external organisations helps to widen the reach of the service to people within the community. So, for example, we've linked with local health services. So that could be social prescribers, GP surgeries and pharmacies. And we've found it really successful working with hospital discharge services as well. And when you're thinking about developing these partnerships, I think it's really helpful to consider kind of which organisations you're already working with across your organisation who are supporting people who could benefit from kind of this specific element of what you're doing. Is there anybody else that you could build relationships with? And also, do all of these organisations have all of the information and knowledge that they need to identify the people who could benefit from the support and also talk to them about the service that's on offer? So those are the kind of actions that need to be taken, I think, in terms of building those partnerships. And then if you're looking to embed the digital inclusion services within your wider organisation, as we've already spoken about, it's helpful to map your internal services to identify where there might be opportunities for identifying people who are digitally excluded or who could benefit from that digital skills provision, and then creating those referral pathways through all of the different services that we deliver, so that when somebody comes through to access support from your organization, they can have a kind of seamless journey of accessing support, whether that's for something completely different or digital skills. And then if you're looking at developing an entirely new service to support people to develop digital inclusion services, we recommend doing horizon scanning. So essentially looking at what services already exist in your community, who they support, what they provide, and how they provide it. And this really helps to avoid duplication, as well as identifying those opportunities we've spoken about already for the partnership working. And ask yourself, how do these existing services compete with or complement the digital inclusion services that you will be or are delivering? And once you know what's already being provided, you'll want to understand how these services meet the needs of your specific audience. So think specifically thinking about the key activities and the barriers that your audience face. And by doing this, you can identify the gaps that your service or your organization can then aim to fill. And then finally, it's also really helpful to carry out a technology audit. So this is looking at the tools and the systems that you're currently using that both might enable or actually hinder the service that you're planning on delivering. So what technology will you need in place within your organization, both for your workforce and also for your audience, if you're providing any kind of loans or donations or session delivery? And does the organizational kind of wider infrastructure support the implementation of that technology as well? So a lot of scanning about what's already out there, understanding your audience better, and then kind of bringing that into your internal strategies and infrastructure to make sure that that all works together.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much, Sarah. That was, once more, very, very thorough. And I really like the fact that, yes, from charities listening to us, they're not alone. There are probably other organizations delivering services that they're already partnering with or that they know of. And it's just by talking, in groups on either on Facebook or CBSs and any type of organizations that bring together all these smaller charities that, they can better map out all the help that is available and really get to the people that need it more. It's been really insightful to hear you all today. Thank you very much for your time. We hope that our listeners have taken loads of notes. I was seeing Ryan taking some notes as well, because there's loads of great advice. As some of you may know, digital inclusion is our key theme for the year for 2024. So we're really hoping to have some of our speakers today back on more podcast or webinar panel conversations, because this is a great topic and there's lots to be done, but there's already load that is being accomplished every day to help bridge the gap and reduce that gap with digital inclusion. So thank you very much to all of you.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you.
Yes, if you have any, if you want to find out more, we'll post more resources on our resources tab, and keep providing more and more written video content on digital inclusion. So please keep tuned. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed this Charity Digital podcast. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of Charity Digital. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. Thanks for listening.